When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, good Thursday evening, everybody. Welcome to The Porch. It is a VolQuest baseball podcast. I am your host, Eric Kane. Got a lot to get into here today. Tennessee returns home to take on Missouri at the friendly confines of Lindsey Nelson Stadium. Bumping up a day this weekend, back-to-back. A Thursday through Saturday series for Missouri at home, and then next week Florida on the road. So a little bit of a shuffle, but a whole lot to get into, and we'll get into that with Luke Lipsius later on in the show, former Tennessee first baseman, former home run champion for the volunteer program. Of course, we know now it's Christian Moore and Blake Burke battling that out, a career home runs number 46 and 44, respectively. Blowing past Luke, who had 40 on his career, but we'll talk with him about that and a whole lot more here as the show goes on here on The Porch. Presented by our friends at Spivey King and Spivey LLP, Matthew A. Spivey, J. Matt King, Richard A. Spivey. Yeah, I saw Matt King. He was up there with his son, Mason. Shout out to Mason. Billy Amick is his favorite player, and they were up there in Lexington at Kentucky, taking in all that was game one, and I believe they saw game two as well. But really, really great people, big-time Tennessee fans, and if you have a problem, they can find a solution for you, T&Trial Lawyers. They specialize in criminal defense, family law, and personal injury. Examples of which can be DUI, homicide, assault, wrecks, personal injuries, all that and more. 80 years of combined experience, Spivey King and Spivey LLP can help you if you have a need. Free consultation at 423-245-4185. Visit them online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. So couldn't do the show without our friends, our partners, Spivey King and Spivey LLP. Second straight year. They have been a part of The Porch, and of course, they were a part of a little bit of the Rocky Top Rewind this past football season as well. So great people there. Thank them as always. So Tennessee and Missouri, got to be honest with you, not as much juice heading into this one as it was this time last week heading into Missouri or heading to Kentucky for the 4-3 matchup. And of course, Tennessee prevailed 2-1. Talked about it in 3-2-1 a little bit on some shows earlier in the week, but really, really good series win for Tennessee. Just cardiac kids, no quit in them, you know, finding ways to win. And I thought the last couple of innings of Sunday's game was just what I love about baseball so much. And you had, you know, pinch hit opportunities. Cannon Peoples comes in, bases loaded, sack fly to give Tennessee one of the leads in that game. That was big for him, as he's obviously struggled this year. You know, Christian Moore was the story of the day. Of course, Kavarys Tears had a two-run home run as well in that game three. But you know, mixing and matching. You pinch hit for Hunter Ensley in that situation, so that means Kavarys Tears is maybe it wasn't that situation. It was one of the situations. So that means Kavarys Tears has a slide over and play center field. He did that for the eighth inning, but when Tennessee got that lead back, you defensive substitutions with a couple-run lead with Ariel Antigua at short, and then Colby Backus in center field, and boy, did he play well, you know, defensively that inning. And, of course, he was rewarded for the start, his first ever on Tuesday. We'll get into Colby Backus here in a moment, but love that about the sport of baseball, just the mixing and matching and managing and all that. So not as much juice going into this one, but hey, Missouri is a team in the SEC, and you know, every team in the SEC is good enough to get you. I tried to point that across in the 3-2-1. I think a lot of people were, you know, giving me some some slack on it a little bit in terms of, you know, oh, what a bold take. But I mean, you guys know where I'm coming from. I mean, you don't come to play. Teams like Missouri can still beat you, but Tennessee should sweep. Missouri's not a good baseball team. 19-23 on the season, 6-12 in SEC play, last in the SEC standings. And it is a new regime for Missouri, and I'll tell you about that regime here in a moment. But Tony Vitello, not mincing his words whatsoever about the past regime and the former head coach for the Missouri Tigers. Here's what he had to say a little bit on Missouri's team this year, and a little bit about the prior regime and how he was not a fan.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a real balanced lineup, similar to Kentucky's, two switch, two left. A handful of righties is their typical lineup. So a similar look with that balance. They've been pitching it well, in particular game twos. But overall, just they're playing the game the right way. I mean, Carrick is, Carrick Jackson replaced me when I left Missouri, and he had been doing all kinds of stuff in the baseball world. He's now the head coach there. And Coach Jameson, who I played for, and I owe a lot to, is now the pitching coach. And Bryson LeBlanc recruits for him. I recruited Bryson. So not only a familiar jersey, but familiar faces. And those group chats and things like that, I choose to not be a part of because I'm this guy. But there is, some communication that goes around. And I'm glad, that group of people are happy. And I'm glad those guys are there as coaches. I mean, it may work against us this weekend because, like I said, they're playing hard and playing the right way. And, I went on a tangent out there with our guys. I mean, so longer answer. Personally, selfishly, I'm glad they're there. I'm glad that other thing's over with. That was a night, I worked 90 hours a week at that place. And, I went to school there and gave it about everything that I do here, I did there. And while that other regime was there, you name it. My dad was in a life-threatening car accident, and I'm getting yelled at in the third base box. Many other things too. So I'm glad that's over with, and there was a change. So we'll welcome those guys in here, but when the game starts, it'll just be like it was in Lexington or the weekend before against LSU. There's a lot of respect in this league everybody has for each other, but when the game starts, the game starts.
All right, so a lot to unpack there, and there was a lot of questions on the board and conversation on the board Tuesday night into Wednesday, and because Tony went in there and he just kind of dropped the hammer, right? I mean, he went in there with a full head of steam, knowing that he was all over the place as he typically is a lot of the times. Emotions are on his sleeve. He's going to tell you what he thinks. He went in there wanting to, in my opinion, praise the guys who are at the job now over at Missouri, and totally bash the former regime and head coach Steve Beazer. That was kind of what it was. He and the former head coach are not friends. I don't think that they like each other at all from Tony's comments there. And a lot of people were asking kind of like, how did that timeline kind of add up? Because the head coach was the former pitching coach and all that type of stuff, or the pitching coach was the former head coach. And how did all this line up? Because if you're talking about the prior regime, aren't those guys that are there now, according to resumes, weren't they there then when he's talking about the prior regime? Not exactly. So again, the former head coach was Steve Beazer. The current head coach is Carrick Jackson. Okay. He was hired last year, after the season when they made the coaching change. He was at Missouri formally for 4 years from 2011 to 2015. So that is who Tony is saying, hey, I owe a lot to him in terms of, where I am coaching and all that type of stuff. And so he was a guy that, Tony coached with and Tony was a part of back when he was an assistant at Missouri. And that's the head coach now, Carrick Jackson. He left Missouri, took a couple year hiatus because according to the research I did on the World Wide Web, his wife got a promotion somewhere and he went with her. But he got back into coaching at Southern for a couple years, 2018 and 2020. He was at Memphis this past year and then came back to Missouri as head coach. So he likes Carrick Jackson. Kind of navigating through those waters of what he talked about in the post-game press conference the other night. Tim Jameson is the pitching coach now for Missouri. He was the pitching coach. Okay, I got it confused a little bit. Carrick Jackson, replaced Tony when Tony left Missouri, but he's good with him. Tim Jameson was the head coach when Tony was there as an assistant and all that. And so, again, trying to navigate through these waters. He was there as the head coach from 1995 to 2016. So he recruited Tony. Tony played for him. He's got a very good relationship with Tim Jameson. He left in 2016 when they hired Beazer, went to Southern Illinois as pitching coach, took a couple years off as well, got back into it. Southern Illinois as a pitching coach, Memphis this past year as a pitching coach, and then, of course, came over, Carrick to Missouri now. And so he's back. So it's kind of weird. It's one of those situations where, man, you were the head coach for a couple of decades and now you're back as a pitching coach. But Tony's got a lot of respect from Tim Jameson, as you heard right there in the clip. The whole thing about getting yelled at in the third base box, what I was told was that was a situation when he was at Arkansas and he was in the third base box coaching and kind of getting heckled and talked to by, you know, the former head coach there. So again, trying to, I don't know the whole story. Clearly, I don't know the whole story. It doesn't really matter. But a lot of you guys were asking questions about that, and that's kind of what I got from that. But fact of the matter is, Tony is happy for his friends who are at Missouri now. He's happy for his alma mater. You know, everybody loves to go home, right? I mean, I'm not saying Tony's ever going to leave. Tony even said, hey, I'm this guy now. I'm Tennessee. But he's happy for those guys because he likes those guys. He did not like the prior coach, and he let that be known. He's at Jacksonville State right now. He went and got A.J. Causey from the transfer portal, took his best arm immediately when he got the job. And so I'm sure he's going to go and try to plug some of those guys that enter the portal this offseason and next offseason as well. But I think he's happy for that regime, but also knows, hey, you know, there's a lot going on right now in terms of what they're trying to deal with. And I remember going through that my first year here at the University of Tennessee. So that's a little bit about the postgame comments that created a lot of the stir here this week. But a little bit about Missouri. I mean, they're going through their struggles, and they're 19-23 on the season, 6-12 in SEC play. They are in dead last in the SEC East standings. They were swept by Arkansas and Vanderbilt. They've lost series to LSU, Georgia, and Kentucky. The lone bright spot so far for the Tigers in SEC play was a three-game sweep of Florida at home a couple weeks ago. And, of course, Florida is just right above them in the SEC standings in sixth place. And Tennessee, again, Missouri this weekend on the road to Florida. It's never easy in the Southeastern Conference. Florida team, still a lot of talent, of course. Scares you a little bit, but you should be stacking some wins. I don't care the name across the front of the jersey. I mean, I understand Florida's got a lot of talent. They're coached well, and I understand they got Caglione there that can do a little bit of everything. But these next two weekends, I'm not going to say you better, but you really need to be stacking some wins on top of one another. Because if you want to be a great team, if you want to be dogpiling in Omaha or dogpiling to get to Omaha and all that, take care of business against these scrap teams. You know, call them what it is. Scrap teams this year is what it is. People could say that about Tennessee as well, though. That's why you got to bring your A game last year before Tennessee turned it on. So it's never going to be easy. But given the production so far this year, hit them while they're down. That's what Tennessee needs to do this weekend against Missouri and next weekend against the Gators. But more on the Gators next week. Missouri pitching-wise, at the time I'm recording this in real time, I haven't gotten the starters for Missouri, but it's kind of been a mixed bag. You know, Logan Lunsford has been the righty the last couple weekends, 1-3, 744 ERA. Javin Pimentel has been the number two starter, a lefty, 2-2, a 373 ERA. He's pitched, and Tony even alluded to it, they've had really good pitching in games too, you know, with this cat. And then last week, they went with a reliever making his first start of the season, Ian Loess, but Ian Loess has started many games throughout his career, an 0-2 record, a 5.40 ERA. That's what they went with last week. You know, Lunsford started each of the past six Fridays after starting the season as the Sunday guy in the rotation, but he started the past six Fridays. He's got an ERA of 7.44. It's not very good, partially due to a really rough start of the season where his first couple of starts he got blown up, but he rebounded. However, he did get rocked for eight runs off seven hits and only 2 2/3. Last weekend against LSU. So that's a little bit about Logan Lunsford. Javin Pimentel is a lefty. Moved in the weekend rotation around week three, week four of the season. Primarily been the Saturday guy in SEC play, games two. Easily owns the best ERA of qualified starters on the team at 373. He was picked apart by Georgia a couple weeks ago, seven runs and three innings and a third, but he's made it through five innings and five of his 10 starts, which is a lot more than you can say about a lot of the pitchers on this roster. Started his career at Arizona, but he's been really solid for Missouri this year. 43 strikeouts, 13 walks, opponent batting average only 205. So he's the one to watch out for, the number two starter. And then a little bit more about Ian Loess. Again, he's been in the rotation in its past, not this year until last weekend. He tossed three scoreless innings against LSU. I'd assume they're going to go that route again. He's been plagued by injuries. I think that's why he wasn't starting this year. He's had Tommy John in the past. 13 appearances so far this season. One start, 0-2, 5.40 ERA. 23 innings and a third, 23 strikeouts, 14 walks. But opponents hitting 261 against him. and that is Ian Loess, a lefty. Some other guys who have made starts and who you will see at some point this weekend, one way or another, righty Bryce Mayer, 1-5, 6.30 ERA. He was the opening day starter, and it was not good. He got demoted after five starts. Carter Rustad, 4-5, 5.87 ERA. He was the Saturday guy to begin the season, shifted to Sundays, and now he's more in a piggyback type role, long relief. Jacob Peden, 3-1, 4.71 ERA, leads the team with three saves, 15 appearances as well. That's a team high. Ryan Magdick is probably one of the more relied upon relievers for Missouri. 1-1 record, 2.84 ERA, and 10 appearances. But overall, Missouri ranks 11th in the SEC in team ERA at 5.73. They sport the fourth worst opponent batting average as opponents are hitting 259 against them. Third lowest strikeout total at 353, and they've given up the second most hits in the league at 359. Tennessee's offense will have a chance to feast against whoever is on the mound for Missouri. You look at the bats, they rank last in the conference with the team batting average of 250, last in slugging percentage, last in on-base percentage, last in runs scored, last in RBI, last in home runs, last in total bases, and lead the league with 420 strikeouts. So what I'm trying to say is, offense is not very good at all. They stole 53 bases on 67 attempts so far this season, so that's something to pay attention to. If you want to look at some of the highlights in the order, Jackson Lovich, he's the DH. He leads the way with a team-best 282 average. For those that qualify, he hits in the three-hole. Seven home runs, 27 ribbies. That's second on the team. Third with 27 runs scored. He's third with 24 runs scored RBI on the season. Third baseman cleanup hitter, Trevor Austin. He's the power source. Nine home runs, 27 ribbies. First baseman, occasional outfielder, Brock Daniels. He's moved into an everyday role here lately. He's logged a 351 batting average over 74 ABs, four homers, 26 ribbies, seven stolen bags. Catcher Jadeer Hernandez, 286 average through 108 at-bats. 10 doubles, that's tied for the team lead. And then Jarrett Curtis, so on a team high, 14 bags on 17 attempts. Shortstop Drew Culberson has swiped nine bags on 11 attempts as well. So a little bit of speed demons, kind of like not nearly like Kentucky last week, but something to pay attention to. But I painted the picture here, guys. This is a team that's toward the cellar of pretty much everything in the league. Tennessee should be able, if Tennessee plays to the way that it's capable of, I mean, Tennessee should be able to handle some business for sure. Want to talk a little bit about Kobe Backus and some of the conversation we've had in the game threads over the last weekend and everything. And I was talking to one of my guys that's in and around the program that I've developed a relationship with. And we're just kind of going back and forth a little bit. Like, you know, he's like, hey, you got to roll with the guys that got you to this point right now, right? I mean, it's pretty evident that Robin Villeneuve is kind of taking a back seat right now. Not because he's not talented, but he can't hit a breaking ball right now. And, you know, I think Tennessee expects big things for him next year. And, of course, he's going to be, you know, getting pinch hit opportunities and everything. But he was getting starter, you know, minutes, if you will. You know, starter opportunities. Not so much the case anymore. Cannon Peebles has taken a clear back seat to Cal Stark, who Cal Stark is almost hitting 100 points better than he was last year. Not so hard when you're hitting a buck 90 last year. But, again, he's almost hitting 100 points better than he was last year. He's having a phenomenal year at the plate, and he gets on base. He draws walks, and he handles the staff better than anybody, you know, in terms of, you know, helping Frank with call a game and, of course, handling the pitchers. But Cannon Peebles got an opportunity the other day, had a sack fly, had a double that was kind of an excuse-me double in the midweek. Hunter Inslee's struggling. No ifs, ands, buts about it. But remember, they tried to bench Hunter Inslee earlier this season, and he wound up right back in the starting lineup as your center fielder. Why? Well, he knows how to play defense. Got the best glove of anybody on the team in the outfield, and he knows this league. He's not going to get a hit every single time. Baseball is a game of failure, literally. And I know he struggled this past weekend outside of Friday's game with that two-run home run. But he's still going to get opportunities, especially on the road, because Tennessee doesn't want to play KT in center field. Tennessee doesn't want to play KT in center field all the time. They'd rather have him in right field. That's why you saw Backus come in there. He's a true center fielder and actually play that in the ninth inning of Sunday's game. So that's kind of where you're at right now. But Backus, again, played well defensively in that role, and then earned the start, his first career start in the midweek, had a home run, started that rally for Tennessee as he they batted around in that, I guess it was the fifth inning. And so I don't think Backus will be an everyday player ever on this team, barring injury, but he should get some more opportunities. He's a good base runner. He's a good defender. He can hit a fastball over the mountains. The thing about him is breaking ball off speed. But as long as he continues to take advantage of those opportunities, he's going to get them. So while Hunter Ensley's struggling, it's a good opportunity for Backus. I don't think he's going to be the starting designated hitter because you'll still have, depending on who's the lineup, you know, Bargo, Robin, Peebles, Chapman, all fighting over those DH opportunities. Ensley as well when he's not in the lineup. So, yeah, I mean, I think that there's some opportunity there, but I wouldn't say, like, oh, we should go ahead and pencil in, you know, Colby Backus because he's in a hot streak right now. Just let him be your DH. There's a lot more to it than that. You know, baseball is a game of failure. Literally, you fail out of 10 times. If you fail 7 times, you're a Hall of Famer, right? I mean, that's just kind of the way this sport works. And so I think a lot of times we get too caught up in every single pitch or every single at bat when you got to step back and look at what you've done over the course of a week or over the course of a series or over the course of a season or whatever. That's just the beautiful thing about baseball. So anyway, long story short, I kind of rambled on there. I think Colby Backus has earned the opportunity to get some more opportunities. But in saying that, I don't know if that means he's going to be the starting DH on Friday, because I don't necessarily think that's going to be the case. However, if you do want to toy around with him in the lineup or whatever, this would be the weekend to do it for sure. But it's a great problem to have if you're Tony Vitello, because it means you're creating more and more depth, and you're going to need that depth as the season goes along, especially, you know, on the mound as well. Starting pitching for this weekend. So I went over who are we playing this weekend? Who's Tennessee playing? I went over Missouri's. This weekend it's going to be Stamos on Thursday in the open, Beam on Friday, and then Tennessee officially put out a TBD on Sunday. I think what that kind of means is maybe if they have a need for Xander kind of in games one or games two, then they'll use him. But if not, they'll hold Xander off and he'll start game three, because that's kind of been his role here in the last month or so. Kind of interesting that you're getting a TBD on Sunday, but I think, again, just kind of where you are, and it's a short week, and Banky threw, you know, well into the fourth inning the other day, and Phillips has already, you know, thrown a lot this week, you know, going back to Sunday, and of course what he did on Tuesday. So I think because it's a short week, you want to give yourself some more options, and that's why there's that TBD on Saturday for game three. Whereas if you need Xander in game one or game two, you throw him and then you figure game three out. So if all goes according to plan and you get some good efforts from AJ Causey and a piggyback and Aaron Combs and Nate Snead and of course Beam on Friday and all that, then you should expect to see Xander Seacrest out there on Saturday for game three. But nonetheless, that's kind of what Tennessee's rolling with this weekend. Okay, so I talked a lot, more than I usually do. Let's get to VFL. Former Tennessee Gold Glove first baseman, all SEC academic, played here for a decade, one of the great ambassadors for the University of Tennessee, that is Luke Lipsius. He is coming up next as we continue on with the porch. But before we get to Luke, I do want to remind you guys about my friends over at Spivey King and Spivey LLP. If you got a problem, let them find a solution for you, TN Trial Lawyers. They specialize in criminal defense, family law, and personal injury, examples of which DUI, homicide, assault, car wrecks, personal injury, divorce, custody, alimony, parental rights, all that and more, you can get help with Spivey King and Spivey LLP. Over 80 years of combined experience, Spivey King and Spivey LLP provides representation throughout state and federal courts of Northeast Tennessee. They practice primarily in Northeast Tennessee, the Tri-Cities of Sullivan County, as well as Hawkins County, Washington County, and surrounding areas. Whether you are injured in a car accident, need help with a divorce, help with custody of your children, or have been accused of a crime, Spivey King and Spivey LLP is there to help you. 142 Cherokee Street in Kingsport, Tennessee. You can see him in person or pick up the phone for a free consultation, 423-245-4185, or online at SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com. SpiveyKingAndSpiveyLLP.com, proud sponsors of The Porch. Now we'll get into Luke Lipsius.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Luke, a really good weekend for Tennessee, going up and taking a series 2-1 in a top five showdown. It was number 4 versus number 3. After that series, now Tennessee's number 3 across the board, not just D1 baseball. And Kentucky slid back to number 4, according to D1 baseball. A lot of good things happened in that series, but overall, I mean, Tennessee just continues to stack series wins on top of series wins. That's what good teams do.
Yeah, you know, I think the best part about that series is the sun was actually out. I don't think there was anything wrong with the weather, which I think that's the first time we went in there and won a series since 2019. So, you know, over 5 years, that's a pretty tough thing to do. And this Kentucky team is been better than it's been over those, you know, 21 and 23 seasons. So, or whatever, to 22 and 20 seasons. So it was one of those things where we played really good baseball to match another team that also plays really good baseball. And when it came down to it, we just outslugged them in the last two games, whereas the first game they outslugged us. So it turned out to be a lot more exciting of a series than I originally thought it was going to be. Although I will say, I believe I said that there was going to be a 9-4 win mixed in there, and then us balls, we pulled away with that. But yeah, no, absolutely fantastic series. That Sunday game was one of the most fun baseball games I've watched in a long time. Just with how they started off so hot, we came back, they bounced back, blah, blah. It was just, you know, back and forth, just such a good series from two really good teams atop the SEC East. And, you know, we got some ground to gain, and then hopefully we'll be able to close that gap here in the home stretch.
Yeah, I mean, it was everything we thought it was going to be in terms of just a really good baseball series. And I mentioned this earlier, but like towards the end of the game, one of the reasons I love baseball so much is you play matchups and everything, and you know, pinch hitter here for Inslee, and it pans out, and then, you know, Inslee's out, so you got to slide Tears over, but you don't want Tears in center the entire time. So when you have the lead in the ninth inning, you put Backus out there, and boy, did he make a play! He earned the start on Tuesday, and he went yard as the DH. And I like when guys continue to take advantage of their opportunities, and just using him as an example, man, Colby Backus did that, and we'll see how much more we'll see of him, and hopefully he's earned the right to get a little bit more PT. And, you know, Cannon Peebles still struggling overall, but had that sack fly on Sunday, which was huge. Really good to see guys take advantage of those opportunities.
Yeah, well, the first thing is Tony V, and his button pushing on Sunday was unbelievable. I don't think I've ever seen a more ballsy button push than Marcus Phillips coming in to close the game. But also, you know, putting Peebles in there, it's one of those things where, like, you kind of thrust someone into the fire and they, like, just kind of learn how to be good again maybe. And so, you know, after that sack fly, I was like, all right, he's going to get confidence. Hopefully he'll start back up. But then Tuesday, you know, another kind of disappointing performance from him. I don't want to say I'm completely off of him, but we're to the point where, you know, you can slump, but this is just a whole season thing where he's just not himself. And you know, you want him to turn around so bad. So we'll see what happens there. But yeah, but then throwing Backus in, which I thought that the Peebles move offensively was fine. For the hitter, it was weird because I'm sitting there thinking, like, all right, what's this move going to do? You can't burn a DH. Like, how are we going to, you know, shift everyone around? It ended up working out. But yeah, then throwing Backus in there, he performs. It's what you want to see, and it's what we've seen all season is guys being thrown into these positions and they're stepping up. And I think it's just a culture we have, and it's really, really good to see, especially nearing, you know, that postseason run. People that are gonna not let the moment get too big, and they're gonna just keep on doing what they do, and that's, you know, mashing baseballs, making plays on defense. So it's really cool to see from those guys.
Yeah, no doubt. And then I mentioned it earlier in the show, and of course you and I have talked about this as well. I mean, it feels like we as fans, you know, we live and die on every single pitch, on every single at bat, and that's just not the game of baseball. It's literally a game of failure. Mm-hmm. And so, like, yeah, Hunter Inslee's struggling with the plate. He homered on Friday, but he's struggling with the plate right now. Cal Stark is not going to get a hit every single time, but Cal Stark's hitting a lot better than he normally does. But those are the guys. And I'm not saying you've given up on Peebles and you're giving up on Robin or, you know, any of those guys. They're still going to have their roles and pinch hit, and just like on Sunday. And again, if you take advantage of your opportunity, you'll get another one. But, like, I was talking to somebody over at the program the other day. It's like, kind of ride with the guys that got you here. You've won You've lost seven games, and you've lost seven and 41 games this year. Mm-hmm. You're pretty daggone good ball club.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think you said it best, like, there's guys who we saw at the start of the season who are now going to be role players, and it doesn't hurt to have a pinch hitter who's got, you know, hitting 350 with five homers, you know, coming up to the plate. Just as far as, you know, another team's perspective, you're going to look at that and be like, oh, my God, another one. But, yeah, you ride with the guys that got you there. And not only is seven losses in 41 games crazy, it's the amount of homers they're hitting. I think they're almost pacing that LSU team. Like, it's pretty unbelievable. In fact, I did do the math. If you run it out to the amount of games the 2022 team played, they're pacing about 180 homers, which is pretty dang impressive. When you look at that lineup, but it also just makes sense when you look at that lineup. Dean to get into double digits just to add another player above double digit homers, you know, because I feel like he's been sitting on nine for like 2 months here. But yeah, that offense is firing. And the guys that got you there are going to play because they, one, have the most chemistry, know what they're playing with. And then two, V's got so much confidence in them that they can just go out and do whatever they want.
See, Tennessee, yeah, heading into the weekend, you know, leading Austin Peay, who's in second place in the country, 115 to 106 home runs, so an 11 home run lead. If you look at Georgia, Tennessee is – oh, crap, I changed off. Anyway, Georgia's in third place, and Tennessee significantly widened that margin. You look at individual home runs, man, and, like, Simo's getting up there. He's, like, tied for eighth, so he's still down there a little bit. But 19, he's five away from tying the single-season home run record. Yeah. He's now two ahead of Burke at 46 to 44. His unbelievable season just continues on. But before I forget, I do want to ask you about, let's go back to the Friday game. Mm-hmm. Noteworthy because, you know, the play to Amick in the eighth inning or whatever is 101 miles an hour off the bat, originally ruled an error. The next half inning, Burke's up there, hitting streak on the line, and it's now at 31 and like 39 or something ridiculous, but hitting streak on the line, he hits 103 miles an hour off the first baseman's mitt. Both ruled an error initially. I'm fine with both of them being ruled the same. If it was a hit, they both need to be. If it was an error, they both need to be. Go back after the game, they change it. It wasn't Tennessee's doing, this was Kentucky's doing. So good for Burke, but as a first baseman, man, what did you think about those two hard-hit balls and how difficult is it to field 103 mile per hour ball off the bat?
So I think in that instance, again, yes, if you change one, you got to change both. But in that instance, with a ball that's hit that hard and it just kind of careens off or whatever it does, as the infielder, you want it to be a hit. If you're not going to catch it, of course.
Because it hurt Causey's line, man. His line doesn't look good anymore.
You look at those rulings and you're like, all right, who do you want to hurt? The pitcher or the hitter? Or the fielder, you know? And in most home ballparks, they're going to lean towards the hitters, of course. So I think that's where you see that coming from. But also, you know, Burke is great. Which actually doesn't make sense. I forgot we're playing in Kentucky. Either way, I think, you know, they probably saw the extracurriculars. Maybe Kentucky was throwing us a bone or whatever. But regardless, you know, they probably wanted to defend the player saying, hey, he's not actually making this error. He just hit it that hard. Either way, you know, it's good for Burke for that streak because, you know, you think about it, 31 games to date is pretty incredible as far as getting a hit in every single one. And not only that, it's not like he's getting one hit in all of them. It's a lot of multi-hit games, you know, and he's keeping his home runs up. It's really awesome to see something like that for history to keep going, as we're seeing with this home run race.
He has fallen behind, though, in the race for the most doubles in the country. Mm-hmm. He's tied for third, one back of a couple of guys who have 21. He has 20. He's been sitting at 20 for like a week now.
It's so disappointing, you know.
So disappointing. What did you think about the early hook for Chris Stamos? Having that security blank with AJ Causey for that situation, love it. But Stom's going to get the start again tomorrow, so that's good. But early hook, it worked out, stranded two, and got out of that first inning scoreless on Friday.
So hindsight, of course, it worked out is the thing. But let's say Causey was only able to give you three instead of six, and then you burn Snead for the weekend, or you do this and that, you mix in two more guys. It's one of those things where you're flipping a coin and you're betting on your dude, which is V is always a guy that's going to bet on his dude. but it could have gone a lot worse, and then it could have set us up in a really bad position for the rest of the weekend. I didn't think Stiles was pitching, you know, too horribly enough to burn him there, but again, it's one of those calls. You know, V's been notoriously good for making the right call, and it did pay out, even though we did lose the game. Best case scenario, you know, Steve comes in for a couple innings. Of course, he gives up a couple runs. Either way, you know, I at first didn't like the call. Looking back, now that I know if someone would have said, hey, Cause is going to give you six, I would have said, all right, you know, we can do it. But again, you would like to see Stamos go at least three, so that way Cause has a chance of finishing the game, you know.
I just felt like it was one of those, like, okay, this is a big-time series. You know, he's thrown 10 pitch or whatever it was. Doesn't have it. Big situation. Let's go ahead and just do it.
And so that's another thing. V earlier in the season, and I think he said it in an interview or something, mentioned that he's been burned by leaving people in too long, you know, and I think everyone flashes back to the 2022 Notre Dame game. But he probably was thinking that, and I believe there was an instance last weekend where the same thing happened. There could have been it was a pivotal, you know, ride him or don't, and he made the switch, and it did work out again. So I think we might see a little bit of shorter leashes on guys just because it's had success.
There's always those situations that we can nitpick every single game. I mean, the Notre Dame game is big because of the stage. I mean, mm-hmm. Right? But like in every single game, we can nitpick some stuff. But anyway, Causey looks like he's, I don't care what that line read, he goes to four earned in six innings and a third when it was two earned before the stat change. He's been pitching much better. I'm more surprised they didn't go back to Stom at some point in Sunday's game because it was just so crazy. But then I got to thinking about it. You went from Xander, Banky pitch, and then you rode Kirby. That's a lot of lefties. So like it almost kind of makes sense. But like again, Stom didn't get hardly any work last week at all.
Yeah, I know. Well, he better be fresh for Friday then, because we didn't see him in the midweek either. But yeah, what I like that they're trying to do with Banky is, you know, give him more confidence because they obviously see something in him. Of course, this Sunday, it did not pay off. He was out real early. I think it was just maybe one out or two outs that he got. But yeah, it's so funny because I think that they did that to not throw Stamos off of his routine. Because let's say he gets an inning on Saturday or Sunday, and then he's running on, you know, 4 days rest, especially this week, which is a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, throws him off as what his thing. And then, you know, he goes one inning again and Causey comes in. I think it was more of a keep him in his routine deal than it was, hey, we don't need you or this matchup doesn't work, blah, blah, blah.
What have you liked from Aaron Combs? And then when you're done with Combs, about Marcus Phillips, they need Binky, Phillips, and, you know, even Loy to kind of step up for you as the season goes along. But Combs has been great his last three or four. Phillips, big situation against Kentucky. The last two midweeks, he's been great. You know, it feels like Tennessee's bullpen's becoming deeper, which thankfully, I mean, it's about time.
Yeah, I think our prayers have been answered, you know, and it's funny. I don't know if they've said any news on it, but A.J. Russell is still sitting back there, and you almost forget about him for how good this pitching staff has been doing without him. But yeah, so Combs has been looking great. You know, the heater's playing up. The slider is biting. And when that thing's biting, it's almost impossible to hit. We see him get in trouble when, you know, it's kind of floating side to side. But his slider's been biting. His off-speed's been really good. And then, of course, he's locating really well. So he's just being that pitcher that we know he can be. But yeah, it's great to see, especially Phillips coming in such a big situation, doing what he does. And then, of course, he had a really good weekend last Tuesday, and then this Tuesday pitched pretty well. So it's really good to see down the stretch. And I'll mention down the stretch probably from here on out, because this is when you want to be starting to catch fire. You know, we already have an established lineup that's not going to change. We got our established guys that are going to be, you know, filtering in and out. And now that staff is coming around, it's all, you know, clicking or starting to click at the right time.
Yeah, and you reminded me, I might as well mention it here, A.J. Russell. I put it on our message board a little bit earlier in the week, but throwing a little bit, starting to work out a little bit more. I think that he's still a couple of weeks away. I've been saying early to mid-May's, kind of when you pinpoint it. I think the Vanderbilt series is, as of right now, I bet like he would be back no later than the Vanderbilt series. But even when he comes back, he'll be, you know, short spurts, you know, two innings, three innings, 40 pitches, open, middle relief, close. And I mean, man, what a September call-up that'll be, you know, to have a guy like A.J. Russell to, not give you a ton, but to be there and you can pick your spots with them, kind of like you do with Snead right now.
Yeah, and that's all you need. It's another piece, and it's so crazy because he's just, you know, sitting back there in the shadows and just wait till he explodes back onto the scene again. Like you said, it'll be, you know, end of regular season into maybe a little bit of the postseason. You know, we'll really see him come alive probably in the SEC tournament or whatever, you know, where you have to have that depth of the bullpen. But it's one of those things where he's going to want it. The fans are going to want it. I think it's going to come together in something really special when he does start to extend his innings to more than, you know, that pitch count that he's going to be on when he comes back.
Tony Vitello was talking about Missouri after the game on Tuesday. I don't know if you saw his interview, but you know Tony. New regime and everything, and he likes the people who are in place now, but he didn't mince his words, man. He does not like the former head coach at Missouri whatsoever. Did you ever get the feeling that, I mean, you probably did. I mean, this is his alma mater. This is where he got his coaching start. This series feels a little bit more for him, I would imagine.
It always does, and everyone knows it. You know, Arkansas was a little bit heightened as well just because he comes from there. But so Missouri, it's funny, in 21 or 2, whenever we played at Missouri when I was on the team, we went, and so we always do this. We always go on Thursday. We have a hitting session. Actually, Friday morning, we have another hitting session, and it's just, you know, it's get everyone loose, whatever. We normally do it at their batting cages, at their facility. Well, Missouri, of course, with this old head coach, would not let us go to their batting cages. So, of course, we had to, you know, pull some strings, get us into some other cages elsewhere. But, yeah, it's one of those things where you just have not a hatred, but, like, I'm going to beat you. And it's almost like, you know, you've beaten your dad at sports when you're young or whatever, where you just have this extra sense, heightened sense. And, you know, when V feels it, everyone else can feel it. And, you know, it's good that it is being played at home. Cause again, Columbia, one of those other places, not fun to play at.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be a heightened sense. So it'll be another fun series to watch.
As a player, and you're not a pitcher, but you're still a creature of habit. When you have to change from, and really Tennessee, it works out well this year because the Thursday through Saturday series are back to back. It's this week and next week, but going from that Friday, Saturday, Sunday to Thursday, Friday, Saturday for you, in your preparation, anything change? What's the biggest difference there?
No, I think the general sentiment around the team is like, yes, we get to play quicker. Not only do, you have your, you know, Thursday night practice on Wednesday night, but then also, we're not going to lie, the back half, you have Saturday night off. So, like, you don't have to worry about a Sunday game, which that 2021 and 2022 team, our mantra was, you know, you got to fight for your right to party, and you get to party on one of the fun days. But no, everyone likes a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. There's more hype with it because you are playing on Thursday when less people are playing. And then, of course, you finish on Saturday, and you get to blow off the rest so you can really focus on, you know, hey, lock it in for this. You know, 2-3 days, we're gonna get after it during these games, because we know we have that Sunday off day, and then, you know, Monday usually will be another lighter practice day. So it's, I think Thursday, Friday, Saturday series were much more looked forward to than, you know, a normal Friday, Saturday, Sunday series.
Yep, makes sense. I know, again, I don't expect you to know a ton about Missouri because I'm sure of all the SEC baseball you want to be watching, Missouri's not up on that list, but you look at them. I mean, they're, you know, pitching staff 11th in the SEC at the ERA, fourth worst opponent batting average, third lowest strikeout total, giving up the second most hits. Offensively, they're last in average, slugging, on base, runs scored, RBI, home runs, total base. I mean, they've struck out the most in the league. They're last in the SEC East, knowing that you're still capable of winning a game if you don't come ready to play. As a player, again, how do you approach a series like this when you know you should beat the crap out of them, but you can't act like it's assumed, right?
Yeah. So this is a perfect instance of a trap series, right? We go to Florida the following weekend, which is going to be on everyone's minds, and this team is a very beatable team. So what do you do? It just means you got to stay extra locked in. And let's not forget, this is a team that swept Florida. So they have the means to do something. Whether or not they do it, I guess, is up to them. But yeah, it's just one of those things where you got to tell yourself a little extra, like, hey, find ways to make it mean something. You know, it's easy to make it mean something when you're playing the number one team in the nation, when you're playing a rival, that thing. But when you're playing a historically, or as far as, you know, recent history, a historically not good team in Missouri, you do have to find ways to get a little extra excited, you know, to stay more locked in than you normally would, because if you don't, then they're going to beat you and it's going to be real bad if they do, especially in that locker room. I wouldn't want to see or be talked to by Tony B at all if we end up losing. But I think that this team has shown, and you can tell by the midweeks, if they had been sandbagging midweeks, then you would have been like, all right, this is definitely one of those series that you could lose. But, you know, they take care of business on the midweeks, which leads me to believe they'll take care of business this weekend.
Yep, I think so too. Hey, out the door, you know, you and I were talking before we hit record about Andre. Give us an Andre update, obviously, as he's in AAA OKC for the Los Angeles Dodgers. But also, man, I mean, you know, Trey's made his debut. He's, you know, AAA majors. Beck is right on the cusp. Gilbert's right on the cusp. I mean, it's, and Ben Joyce have already made his debut. I mean, it's got to be really cool to see your friends and guys you were just playing with 2 years ago, man. I mean, they're right there. I mean, how neat is that?
Yeah, well, so I'll kind of update, you know, Andre and Becker are playing a series this week. Is really cool, you know, because you got your, of course, brother, and then you got a really close friend in Beck. They're both doing really well, heading close to 300, OPS nearing 1,000. So they're rocking it in AAA. I think Beck will be the next guy that gets called up. I haven't really checked in on Gilby. I got to go do that. But like you said, those guys that you are not, you know, removed from, that you are, were at an arm's length with, and they're making their big league debuts is just so cool. And it's a testament to the program and what Tony B's doing, because I know he's sending them texts and he's calling them and doing all that stuff with them. So it gives you a sense of pride, you know, like, hey, like, I went to battle with those guys and now they're doing such big things. It's just a really cool feeling when your close friends accomplish what they accomplish. And yeah, it's so neat.
Well, it's cool to watch from afar. I can only imagine how it is for you. And of course your brother, who's already been doing his thing and is going to be back in the show here pretty soon as well. So, Luke, man, appreciate it as always. And let's root for a sweep this weekend.
I sure hope so. Let's do it.
Great stuff there from Luke Lipsius, former Tennessee first baseman and co-host 2 years running here at the Porch. Always enjoy getting his perspective on the game. We talked a lot about, you know, what's been going on with Tennessee, starting pitching, moving up a day in terms of the series, Friday, Saturday, Sunday to Thursday, Friday, Saturday, that adjustment, all that and more. What he said about Blake Burke and Christian Moore, Tennessee's bullpen. Always enjoy getting the thoughts from Luke Lipsius. I enjoy you guys as well. Your interactions on the game thread have been top-notch this year. Can't thank you enough for all of that, and looking forward to doing it again this weekend. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, Tennessee against Missouri. I'll be at the stadium. We'll be in the game thread. I'll have plenty of post-game coverage for you all weekend long right here on the Porch and at BallQuest.com. Thanks so much, guys. Really enjoyed it, and I'll see you at the Porch.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.